He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council, the executive producer. You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Every time you do that update and you say bag of Skittles, bag of potato chips, I hear Louis C.K. in my head and I get nervous.
Why?
I tense up. People that know what I'm talking about know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with the routine.
Then we can't talk about it.
Okay, perfect.
But if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, if you've been listening to the show all morning, we've been talking about that and everything else. We got you through the NBA draft. We got you through the Preds. And we're going to get back to that in a little bit. Don't want you to forget, Scott Burnside going to join us in about 30 minutes. And we'll talk a little bit about the draft tonight, expected trades. Also, another shout-out to Joel Corey, who joined us last hour to break down all things contract-related for the Titans coming up. Really interesting stuff. But we've also started to finally, with much joy and love in our hearts, get into this college football conversation that we've been waiting for months to be able to have. So as we dip the toes into the waters and sort of get everybody caught up on what's been happening around college football, we like to bring on some brilliant minds to help us with that. And this is one of them from CBSSports.com, college football writer Chip Patterson joining us. Chip, thanks for some time this morning. We appreciate you.
Oh, man, I don't know about brilliant, but I'm more than happy to not only dip my toe in, but do a cannonball so we can get this rolling. I'm like officially, what are we sitting here, like maybe 2.5-3 weeks from the start of the media day season? And I don't know, that's just talking season. But that's the college football preseason in earnest in my book.
If you could see the joy on Braden Gall's face every time you say media days, I mean, it's just a pure unadulterated happiness.
It's totally fake. That's fake news right there, Chip. Let me ask you this before we get started on the piece you just wrote about win totals. I want to ask about Alabama, because every time I do interviews and people ask me about college football this time of year, I never get asked about Alabama. I've done 20 interviews like you're doing right now, and no one has any interesting questions about the University of Alabama. So what is interesting about the University of Alabama right now?
That they start the season against Florida State. You know, like, I'm already to, Braden, I'm already at the point where I'm starting to, like, break that down and try and set my own line on that game, because I'm looking at the FEC, and I cannot remember. I started at CBS in 2010. I cannot remember a time where I've been more confident in the distance between the Crimson Tide and the rest of the conference.
Yep.
And I haven't been covering this sport for a long time. I've been lucky enough to be able to do it for as long as I have, and to be able to still be doing it. I'm grateful for it every day. But, man, I feel pretty confident that the most talented roster in all of college football, like, they even catch This is a good year in terms of the schedule and the schedule rotations. Like, outside of having to finish the season and play the Iron Bowl on the road, pretty much everything else is shaping up pretty well for Alabama to at least make it back to the college football playoff. So the questions for me aren't really will they make it back to the college football playoff, but it's going to be, are they going to be able to be in a position in terms of health, in terms of the steps forward for Jalen Hurts, in terms of, you know, these players that we're looking at, like Jerry Jeudy, a wide receiver, or who in that loaded running back position is going to be emerging and who's going to be in the rotation, because I just think they're going to be playing in late December and early January for the national championship, and it's just going to be, you know, where is everybody else at that point in relation to the Tide? We are measuring every national championship contender, you know, whether you think Ohio State's coming out of the Big Ten, USC coming out of the Pac-12, maybe you think that Oklahoma State's going to be able to somehow piece something together, make a run as Florida State out of the ACC. Everyone is going to be measured against the Crimson Tide, and that starts in Atlanta on the first weekend of the season.
We're talking to Chip Patterson. Chip, you wrote a really great piece on CBSSports.com that sort of gives you your prediction, your win total prediction for everybody in the SEC. My favorite line of the piece is about Kentucky, where you said this is the, quote, let's get weird pick of the offseason, because you put Kentucky at 7 and the Vols at 7.5. So I have to say that just to make our whole listening audience mad at you. But then I have to also say, what
those
is
were
it?
Vegas. Those are Vegas numbers.
Well, sure. But to point it out that way and have it feel like the two teams are so close, I think is a bit shocking to Vols fans. What do you see in Kentucky that you really like?
I mean, it was the let's get weird pick, right? This is a Kentucky team that is probably as confident offensively as it's been in the last 4 to 5 years. You know, the strides that they had made over the last couple seasons to be able to finally break through. There were a couple of games where in prior years winnable games were getting led away. And, you know, I know coaches have been saying this probably since the 1900s, but I know I plucked it from Rich Rodriguez. You're going to lose big, you're going to lose small, you're going to win small, and then you're going to win big. And I don't know, man, something makes me think that maybe, just maybe, like Kentucky football, I'm not expecting them to be a win big program. But I think that from losing small to winning small, a lot of times it's letting those winnable games get away when you're losing small, and then being able to get that breakthrough, get into the postseason, get a couple of those victories. You know, it's the let's get weird pick. The way that I do this, all right, so as Braden said, the numbers are from Vegas, and then I go down everyone's schedule. I do like one for what I believe to be a win, zero for what I believe to be a loss, 0.5 for what I think would be about a toss-up or 50-50 game. And as I'm going through Kentucky's schedule, I just found a lot more 0.5, 50-50 toss-up games than I've ever done. And I've been doing this for the last 4 or 5 years in June. And, again, it's you know, making win totals predictions in June. So it absolutely is, you know, just guessing here based on the odds makers' numbers. But I think that when I'm looking at the SEC East, I think that Kentucky is right there about the third or fourth best team, and it's only going to be one or two weird games. And with what they have offensively, I like them to maybe come out on top.
Number one prop bet in this list for the SEC, in my opinion, is Mississippi State. Give me the over all day with the Bulldogs at 5. Is that number one on your board? If not, what is?
I like that one. I also like South Carolina over, and both of those are for the same reason. I think that when you've got not only above average, but when you've got very, very good quarterback play, and in terms of Nick Fitzgerald and Mississippi State, that's not only good, very good quarterback play, but I would say elite productivity. Now, that's not the same as Nick Fitzgerald being an elite quarterback, but I think that what they put together last season, spent some time in April breaking down some of the tape, looking at Mississippi State's offense, and I loved it, man. Dan Mullen's got all of the run-pass option stuff rolling with Fitzgerald. If he can stay healthy, I like Mississippi State to be putting basketball scores on the scoreboard. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able – like, they're going to lose some games where they score a lot of points, but Fitzgerald is just too talented and too much of a perfect fit for that system for them not to be able to get 6 wins.
So talk to me a little bit about the Vols, because you talked about your system and grading points and zeros and half points. There's a lot of what-ifs there with Tennessee. So how do you decide which what-ifs, and when you weigh those, how do you look at this season from a positive on the what-ifs or a negative?
I think that some of the injuries that have really, really hurt Tennessee and kept the Vols from capitalizing on what everyone believed was the window. You know, the window for this Tennessee team to go win the SEC East for a lot of people was the last 2 years. You had Josh Dobbs. You had Cameron Sutton. You had Jalen Reeves-Maybin. You had, like, NFL-caliber players out there on the field, and you couldn't get it done. Florida was the team representing the SEC East. And, you know, that is what led to a lot of the discontent around the Tennessee fan base. It's what led to all the rumors and reports coming out from within that building. And I'm just kind of wondering if things turn a little bit with the football gods, and we see that some of those players, like there were still good recruiting classes. You know, Khalil McKenzie, Shai Tuttle, like there were young players that were highly rated that were thrown into the fire early, and I think that experience might end up paying off, because remember the Vegas numbers, you know, a little bit is what the odds makers believe. Some of it might be the public perception. And I don't know, as much as Butch Jones got dragged through the jokesters for the champions of life comments, like what if all that eternal optimism ends up paying off with one or two wins? Like the big one for Tennessee, like Tennessee LSU, which is the better team next season? I tend to believe LSU has better talent, but I can't say for sure that LSU is going to have better quarterback play. I think Darius Geis is probably the best player on the field when those two teams meet, but I can't say for sure that LSU is a better team than Tennessee in 2017. And if that's where I'm at with the Vols, well then, you know, they are a middle of the pack, top number 2, 3, 4 SEC East team.
Fantastic stuff, guys. Read them on CBSSports.com. Follow them on Twitter at Chip_Patterson. Chip, man, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for coming on.
All right, y'all be well.
Great stuff from Chip, and we'll get your reaction, Braden, to some of that because I have some big questions for you. But first, obviously, you know that I made the switch. I made the switch to Xfinity. A lot of you guys made the switch over to AT&T and thought you were going to get something there, but you just didn't. And where you can get something, where you can get what you want, is Xfinity. We got the best Wi-Fi speeds and best Wi-Fi experience, the fastest download speeds, and the most coverage throughout your home. Xfinity has more speeds to more homes than AT&T does, plus fast home Wi-Fi speed in every room of your house so you can watch your favorite shows wherever you want. I have an offer that ends June 30th, requires enrollment, Nico Bill, paperless billing, and auto pay. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas, new customers only. Equipment taxes, fees, including broadcast TV fees and RSM fees, extra subject to change after promo, regular rate supply. Free installation limited to standard installation on one outlet, non-standard installation. Equipment taxes, fees, extra Wi-Fi claim based on Xfinity, gigabyte server router coverage, and speed on a 5 gigahertz band. Here's what you need to do. Hurry up and make the switch to Xfinity Internet for as low as $19.99 per month for 12 months, or ask how to get even more speeds with the Blast Internet. Now with speeds up to 75 megabytes. Xfinity Internet, perfect for everyone. So be sure to call 1-800-XFINITY or visit Xfinity and make the switch to Xfinity Internet today. And make sure to ask about Xfinity Mobile, a new kind of network designed to save you money. Get up to 5 lines of talk and text included with Xfinity Internet service with no activation, no line access fees, plus 2 easy data options available so you can stream entertainment on the go and save along the way. Go ahead, compare it to AT&T and then visit Xfinity.com. When we come back, SEC win totals. Braden, I need you to tell me who's going to finish in third if the Vols are going to finish in fourth. I don't know how it's going to happen. We'll get Braden's thoughts on everything Chip just said next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Guys, I'm going to admit I have fear of abandonment, so I need you all to hang out with me tomorrow. I'm going to be at the Electronic Express in Clarksville, 2819 Wilmer Rudolph Boulevard, this Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. Don't just come to hang out with me, although hopefully that's a little bit of a factor.
And if you have FOMO, then you need to be there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure.
This is the Electronic Express famous half-price fair and huge tent sale going on now in Clarksville. Save up to 50% in every department while supplies last. Electronic Express, we make it happen. Come hang out with me in Clarksville tomorrow from 1 to 3 p.m. And we will all, long hug, slow dance, whatever it takes to get everybody out there to hang out at Electronic Express. So I want to, Braden... I want to dip back into what we just heard. Because,
can we cannonball like Chip?
Chip just joined us. Chip Patterson from CBS Sports joined us and gave us some SEC analysis, and it included, let's say it this way. He seems to be relatively cautiously optimistic on Kentucky, and I thought your brain was going to explode.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Kentucky.
Okay, so who do you want to talk about?
Mississippi State.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Mississippi State.
All the mortgage money on Mississippi State over.
Okay.
The Vegas line is 5 wins. They play Charleston Southern, Louisiana Tech, BYU, Kentucky, UMass, Ole Miss, and Arkansas. And they get Bama and LSU at home, and that doesn't include Georgia and Auburn and A&M as well. There is no way in hell they lose less. They win less than 5 games. There's just no way. He said they're going to score a lot of points. Nick Fitzgerald, he said a lot of good things, and then he said, I'm just not sure about the defense. They're going to give up a lot of points. That's why you hire Todd Grantham. You went out and got a defensive coordinator that is spectacular, and he's going to come in and create a lot of turnovers. Mississippi State, 5 wins. Give me the over all day, every penny I have in the bank. That is number one bet on the board in the SEC. Not even close, in my opinion. Not even close. Kentucky, I'm not touching that with a 37,000-foot pole.
So you don't like Kentucky at 7 wins, according to Vegas?
It's because of the Vegas number. If I feel like push is the answer, and I know Chip's got to write, he's got to make a pick there, and he said push. If push is the answer, then you don't touch the bet. Auburn at 9, for example, right? Auburn's over-under is 9. They play Clemson and Alabama. Your margin for error for Alabama for Auburn is basically nothing. I'm not touching 9. Georgia, 9. Not touching that one. No chance. Kentucky at 7, I'm going under. If I had to go, but because I think that
I need that to be over because, see, here's my logic. I've
eight,
got,
8-4 ain't happening for Kentucky this year, folks. It ain't happening.
The problem is I've got the Vols – I've squarely said routinely that the Vols are going to finish in fourth place in the SEC East this year.
Can we
I'm digging my heels in.
I know. Can we put something – you need to put your money where your mouth is.
No,
and not money. It needs to be like public embarrassment.
Nah. No, there's no reason. There's no need to have
– You cannot sit here on professionally on the radio and say – that the Tennessee Vols are going to finish fourth and then not pay for it if you're not if you're wrong, when you are flat out dead wrong,
you have to
pay for it.
Absolutely you can. Have you ever watched ESPN? I mean, all the guys that sit up
you're
there.
You're better than that.
And make big bold statements. This is my big bold
you're
statement.
You're Yasone Fitz. You are held accountable for your actions.
I made my big bold statement. You know, I'm going to live with it. Fourth place in the East.
No, that you're not going to live with anything. You don't have to do anything.
Ridicule counts. But you don't have to place a bet on everything for it to count. I mean,
it's not a. Come on, you need to put. You said something outlandish. I think you're being stupid. I think you need to pay. I think you need to pay the piper on this one. If you lose,
no, absolutely not.
This is soft. This is soft. Soft.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. I'm a fat kid that grows up playing the violin. I've been called worse than soft. My life. No. But see, I need somebody to step up because Tennessee finishes with 7 wins, which is what I predicted earlier. Tennessee finishes with 7 wins. Then I just need somebody else to magically finish with 8th, or a tiebreaker.
Well, no, they could all finish with 7 wins and 4-4 versus 5-3 in the SEC. That's what you're asking is where do you finish in the SEC versus the standings? Because you're the Vegas over under
total wins versus your prediction
of fourth.
Yeah,
for them
but
to finish
for
them to finish fourth, they're going to have to lose to Georgia, Florida, and then someone else in the East, probably then Alabama as well.
I'm good with all of those.
So that gives them 4 losses. LSU is kind of a push at this point.
I take LSU over Tennessee. I'm buying all in on explosive.
That's not a crazy pick. I'm not. Yeah. LSU might even be favored in that game. Right now they might be favored. I don't know at the end of the year when that game happens who will be favored in that game. LSU's over-under is 9. Tennessee at 7.5. I would take the over on Tennessee. A&M at 7.5. I would take the under on Texas A&M. Ole Miss at 5.5 is interesting because they don't really have anything to play for. But they've got some talent, and last year was sort of last year was the unexpected cratering. Well, some of us maybe expected it, but last year was this dive of a season for Ole Miss. Is there some bounce back? Is Shea Patterson the answer at quarterback? I think he is. Do they go over 5.5? I think there's a chance Ole Miss goes over 5.5. So that one's a tricky one. South Carolina at 5, I would take the over on South Carolina at 5. Missouri and Arkansas at 6, I wouldn't touch those. I think 6-6 is about right for both of those teams. Florida at 8, that's an interesting one because I could think 9-3 is very much within reach for Florida. Really, the only two that I like definitively, like 100%, is Alabama over 10.5 and Mississippi State over 5. Those are the two I feel the best about on the entire board. I'm not sure I would touch any of the other ones. For entertainment purposes only.
Well, and I'll still come back to when I look at the Vols schedule, it wouldn't surprise me if they did lose to Florida, if they did lose to Georgia, if they did lose to Alabama, and if they did lose to LSU. And in the past few years, they've had the ability to drop one other game somewhere just that they shouldn't lose in general.
No question.
So it's not hard for me to see. It's easy for me to see 4 losses in the SEC. It's not hard for me to see 5. And if they mail it in, they could get to 6. It could happen.
Wow.
It could happen. They laid an egg last year.
2-6 is – see, here
– did they not lay an egg?
Are you saying it's about Tennessee?
Yeah.
This is insane. And he's not willing to put anything on the line while he says this stuff.
Wait, hold on. Before you say it's insane –
Florida. I never said it was insane. I think it's hilarious.
But that's what he just said. So,
I don't know what.
Again, Florida.
What's the difference?
You could see today that Florida would be favored. You could see today that Georgia would be favored. You could see those things. That's not
okay.
Florida is their daddy.
Right. And exactly.
Minus last year.
And I'm not. So it's not
a
stretch. It's not a stretch to find those two losses. Obviously, Bama's going to be favored. And it's not a stretch right now to presume that LSU would
also
be favored.
Also Tennessee's daddy.
So that there's 4 losses right there in the SEC. Vanderbilt. Did it to them last year. Nothing says they can't do it again.
State champs.
That's 5 losses right there. So then you're looking at it and saying,
so you're picking Vanderbilt to beat Tennessee this year.
No, I'm not picking that. I'm saying that when you sit here and say that they could finish in fourth, it's not outlandish to think that they could lose those 5 games, and then that doesn't even take into account a South Carolina team that they should beat. They should be able to beat, but that doesn't mean anything, hasn't meant anything in the past. And if Kentucky is any bit better, who knows?
Well, 30 years of 29. If we're going to go with Julian's Florida owns Tennessee, then Tennessee's not losing to any of those teams. Like, if that's Julian's argument for the Florida-Tennessee game, then my argument for Tennessee is, like, what are they, like 28 in a row against Kentucky and
right.
like 29 out of 30 or 29 out of 33 against Vanderbilt. And, you know, you could go on and on down the
yeah,
list
but, yeah,
if you
want
to do that.
No, I don't either.
I don't take any of that into account.
I don't believe in
they were better than Florida last year. They beat them. They smoked them. They get Georgia at home, and they beat them last year. They get South Carolina and Vanderbilt at home. They're going to win those two
okay,
games.
Okay, but let's –
Kentucky
let's...
is a wild card game, and Alabama and LSU are losses. So I'm okay with that. 2-6 is not in question. 2-6 is –
But
That's
as
hilarious.
Much as you want to definitively say it, like you're the big boy in the room, you also have you have to turn around and acknowledge at the same point that they beat Georgia on a Hail Mary.
Sure.
You know, they beat Georgia, which was a losable game, and they played one good half against Florida. Florida fans will tell you that all day long. So to say definitively that you can sit here and be like, oh, they will not lose that, I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying they won't.
I didn't say definitively on Florida or Georgia. I said they smoked them last year and then beat Georgia on the road. They get Georgia at home. I'm not saying definitively one way or the other. I will say definitively they'll beat South Carolina and Vanderbilt.
And I
will say definitively on those two. They're both at home.
But
in
how can you definitively come in and
South
say,
Carolina
I know
can't
this is
tackle
a fact.
Anybody.
But how can you say, yeah, I know this is a fact when they didn't beat Vandy last year? They had every opportunity.
I get it.
Hey,
every
guys,
opportunity.
It's June 23rd, so let's calm down for a second. Go to break.
Well, we should do that. Yeah, we do have
no.
Why would we
calm down?
We have plenty of hockey
SEC
to get into. Scott Burnside going to join us up next. We'll get Scott's thoughts. Also, don't forget Dan Rosen going to join us last hour. We got a lot of big NHL coming up, and we'll take a look at the aggressiveness for the Preds and what they expect. Scott Burnside next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. As we get all set for tonight in the NHL draft, only days after the expansion draft, we wanted to bring on some smarter minds than ours to help us break it all down and figure out what to expect tonight. So to help us do that, one of the best in the business, one of the biggest names in the business, Scott Burnside joining us. Scott, man, we appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, no worries. Kind of overcast here in Chicago, but looking forward to a very interesting day. This might be one of the more fluid drafts in recent memory. It's nowhere near as cut and dried as we've seen in the last years, you know, where guys like Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine and Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel really had sort of set themselves apart from the rest of the group. A very, very tight group through most of the first round of the draft. So it could be lots of activity between now and when the draft begins here in Chicago this evening.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that activity, because one of our discussion points this morning has revolved around the Preds sitting with the 30th pick. It's obviously a low first-round pick. If you were sitting in David Poyle's seat, do you hold that pick and build for the future, or do you try and send that pick somewhere to help you today?
I think, you know, when you're drafting at that position, the ability to turn that into an everyday NHL player is pretty modest, I think, unless you've got another package or you're going to include a prospect or something like that. And, don't claim to know what David Poyle has in mind, but that's my guess is that that's not something he's looking to do right away, unless something falls into his lap. And again, I think there is no consensus or very little consensus when you look at the top picks of all of the first-round players. So I don't know, unless you have a specific player that you really believe is someone who could help your club moving forward for the next 5 or 6 or 7 years, that you would make a package, put a package together and try and move up in the draft. My guess is you aren't going to do that because the teams are all over the map. So you may get a player that you have in your list at 9 or 10. It's quite possible you could get them at 29 or 30. So that would be my guess, is that David Poyle will wait and see how things unfold there. But I would be a bit surprised if there's anything dramatic involving the Predators' first-round pick. But they're still going to get a good player. It's just you won't know until sort of moments before to see which of the how the dominoes fall.
Certainly losing James Neal has opened up a goal-scoring void on the wing for Nashville, but they also have a center problem as well. We don't know what the future of Mike Fisher is, but if you look at these two positions, what does free agency – there's so many commodities here, whether it's money in free agency, draft picks, or trade, that there's commodities David Poyle can work with. What would be your priorities if you were in charge of the Predators as far as those two positions go, center and winger?
Yeah, I think, and we've seen this, we saw how important Ryan Johansson was to the Nashville Predators. The center position has always been a position of concern for Nashville. It's just the way it's fallen, but they've never been able to draft and develop a franchise-type center on their own. So, and we know that Ryan Johansson's a top-flight pivot, but I would say because there are a lot of centers available in this draft, that would be the priority. Now, you mentioned free agency. The problem with free agency is that it's such a thin market, and historically free agents are always overvalued, and I think that's especially going to be the case. There are just very few quality centers, for sure, available, but in general, impactful players that are available as free agents. So, you know, the pressure is going to be on David Poile if he's going to make a move to move one of, you know, if he moves from a position of strength with so many top-end defensemen, with lots of good young defensemen, that's going to be the pressure point, I think. And, you know, then you have to make sure that you're not giving up, you know, too much from an important position along the blue line, in a position that really was so critical to them going to the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time, to try and fill in that hole at the center. But I think the center position, because as you mentioned with Mike Fisher, you don't know. I think that's probably a position that you would look most closely at as opposed to the wing.
Let me ask you, Scott, when you look back on the expansive draft, obviously just a couple of days ago, how does the chaos of that moment and trying to figure out who was going where and what that means long term, how does that chaos interfere or affect the draft tonight?
Well, I think it's a kind of a domino effect. I think you saw Vegas, where I saw one GM refer to it anonymously as being held hostage by George McPhee, the GM of the Vegas Golden Knights. And there were teams that had to go above and beyond what they imagined they were going to have to do in protecting assets. You know, New York Islanders gave up first-round pick, and Tampa had to put a package together. Minnesota gave up a very good first-round prospect. So all these things happen, and I think what I'm curious to see is that now Vegas owns three picks in the first 15. They don't have great center depth in spite of the expansion draft. They'd like to move up into a position where they could possibly get either Nico Hischier or Nolan Patrick. So I think you're going to see the potential movement of those draft picks. And Dallas is an interesting team. They own the third pick. They'd like to get an everyday defenseman. You hear different rumors. New Jersey with the first pick, not necessarily sold on Patrick or Hischier, but would like one of the young defensemen. Cale Makar, perhaps, would be willing to move down. So there's a lot of potential movement, and a lot of it stems from the expansion draft because Vegas is able to stockpile so many assets in terms of draft picks and young prospects that they can be in a position to make further moves before tonight and further upset the cart, if you will, in terms of where people end up drafting and who ends up going in what order.
You step back and sort of take a 10,000-foot view of the Central Division, and Dallas has gone out and paid for a goaltender. Chicago's losing Marian Hossa. St. Louis was sort of in rebuilding mode. Winnipeg looks like they could be sneaky good. And then there's Nashville. Is the balance of power still Chicago's to lose? Is Nashville overtaking them? Is there another team that's in that discussion? Minnesota, maybe? What does the 10,000-foot view of the Central Division look like right now heading into the July months?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And I don't know that Nashville is overtaken. I think it's hard, you know, when you do what Nashville did. To me, you have to automatically put them at the top of the heap. But I think what you've seen, you mentioned Chicago, the unfortunate circumstance with Marian Hossa, who looks like he may not be able to play again, certainly isn't expected to play this season with a skin condition. I think it's too soon to say that they're in decline or that the window is closed for them, and Stan Bowman is a very creative GM in Chicago. But I think what we're seeing is the Central Division already very, very competitive and compressed. I think it's as close now as we've ever seen it. And that's why there's going to be pressure on Chicago. There's certainly going to be pressure on the rest of the teams in the Central. You know, you would identify a couple of issues or potential lineup holes for Nashville. In the salary cap era, no team is perfectly built, and there are teams who are always going to be looking to fill in a hole. I think that Dallas has done a nice job with Ben Bishop with the signing there, and if he stays healthy, he is a top-flight goaltender, and Ken Hitchcock is going to address some of the defensive problems that plagued them last year. So they should be back in the mix. It really is going to be very, very tight. And I think this may be the season if Winnipeg can address its goaltending. Now, that's something they haven't done yet. They're going to jump back in the playoff mix. It could be where we're seeing, again, I think five teams going to the playoffs, but also where teams miss playoffs by, the narrowest of margins. So I'm looking forward to it. I think the Central is going to be a power, but I don't think there is any sort of clearly defined hierarchy like there used to be. And, everyone else was chasing Chicago and St. Louis was right behind them. I think it's too early to tell. And that's why, again, teams will overpay in free agency. But they may feel it's worthwhile because they'll need to fill in that one hole. And the division is so tight, and maybe that one player moves you from fifth to first or something like that. So it should be a great offseason in the Central Division.
Fantastic stuff, guys. Follow him on Twitter, at Overtime Scott B. Scott Burnside, man, we appreciate your time. Enjoy the draft tonight, my friend.
All right, anytime.
Great stuff from Scott in the process. Hey, Julian, let's give away some free stuff! Caller number 5-615-737-1025. You're going to win a pair of tickets to see the music of Zeppelin performed by the Nashville Symphony at the Ascend Amphitheater tomorrow. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5, going to get a couple of tickets to that. You do not want to miss it. Scott just told you how packed the Central Division is going to be, how one player could make the difference between first or fifth. When you look at that, it begs the question, how aggressive should David Poile be? We'll answer that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Don't forget, guys, we teamed up with Dunkin' Donuts, which is why Braden and I are going to soon be, it's going to be called the Roly Poly Show. We're giving you a chance to win a pair of four-day passes to the Nashville Golf Open at the Nashville Golf and Athletic Club Thursday, June 29th through Sunday, July 2nd. Today's the last day to sign up. Registration ends at 10 a.m. You'll regret your entire life if you don't do this. So visit thegamenashville.com for more details. And we've got the participating locations you can go to up on there, too. We also did a little video there before we consumed all dozen donuts.
I don't recall that.
That's because we're on a sugar high. So it raises an interesting question from our conversation we just had with Scott Burnside. Scott, longtime NHL guru and sort of a great broad mind around the game. And one of the things you talked about was the 10,000-foot view, what does the Central Division look like? And his comment at the end that really struck me was all of these teams are packed in so close together that one acquisition can make the difference between first place or fifth place, and the playoffs could come down to just a point here or a point there. And it's another one of those years where you could find yourself at the end of the season saying, yeah, we're the 8th seed, but, because the division looks so stinking good. All of that raises the question, if the division's that packed, if it's that stinking good, how aggressive should David Poile be in this offseason? I mean, that's the real question everybody's trying to answer.
Can I say that I don't think the division is so stinking good, but that David Poile should be aggressive? Can I go with both of those things?
Yeah,
can they both exist?
For sure.
I think St. Louis is in rebuilding mode. They traded away some pieces, so I don't know if they're going to be able to repeat what they did. I think Minnesota is going to be dangerous because they're going to have a great regular season every year. I don't think Dallas or Winnipeg has done enough yet to get into the postseason. So I think it really does come down to Nashville and Chicago. I do think that when Hossa, when this issue with Hossa crops up and then all of a sudden James Neal's gone, that does bring those two teams maybe back to the pack some. But I expect somebody to be aggressive, whether that's Chicago. We've, joked about Chicago going out and getting James Neal from Vegas at the deadline versus Nashville going and getting somebody, whether that's Duchesne in a trade or signing a free agent. I do think that you have to put Chicago on top. But we have learned this year, even within an unbelievably successful playoff run, how important home ice advantage is and how much every single one of those players has talked about it since the end of the series. How important it is to them now. They recognize, I think, how much more important those regular season points are. So to me, there's less excuse for 8th seed, but they're playing hot. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There needs to be a 2 seed, no worse than a 2 seed. They're too good to not be the two seed. And they should be a one or a two. They should compete to win a division, and they should get home ice through most of the postseason. That's what should happen with this team. Now, they may be a piece away from doing that, but they should be competing for the division championship. There's no, like, you cannot look at Dallas's roster and tell me that they're better than the Predators. You cannot look at St. Louis's roster and tell me that they're better than the Predators. I think Winnipeg will, again, I've been on the Winnipeg will be good someday bandwagon pretty early. That's not this year. So, Chicago, sure, you can make the case they should win the division. That's fine. There's no other team that you could definitively say they're better than the Predators, even right now without David Poile making a move.
Well, and the interesting thing out of all of it to me is Chicago, because you just mentioned it, and we've talked a lot. Everybody's heard the fact that Chicago has salary cap issues, but let's not forget one thing. Marian Hossa will be put on long-term injured reserve. When you're put on long-term injured reserve, your contract essentially goes off the books. So as Greg Wyshynski pointed out, a friend of the show, you guys have heard Greg on all of our shows.
Good
a bunch.
Of the program.
As Greg Wyshynski smartly pointed out on Yahoo Sports, this is not the reason for it. We all understand it. But his $5.275 million contract comes off the books, leaving the Blackhawks suddenly with about $5 million to play with.
A little wiggle room.
So when you talk about aggressiveness, if you're the Blackhawks and you feel like, you know, as much as, for example, Joe Thornton has been a conversation on this show for several days, Joe Thornton, a veteran centerman that's contributed to a lot of big teams over the years.
He might be a Hall of Famer. He might be. Probably a Hall of Famer.
37 years old, injured his ACL in the playoffs. I know that's not the biggest deal. But if you're a Preds fan sitting here saying we could rent Joe Thornton for a year, keep in mind, so can the Blackhawks. So part of this aggressiveness conversation has to have one eye on. It's like you're thinking of breaking up with your girlfriend, but you're afraid she's going to date somebody way hotter than you. I mean, that's a sort of you've got one eye on what you're going to do here, but you've also got one eye on what Chicago is going to do, because if they go out and they're aggressive and they add a Joe Thornton and the Blackhawks do not go out and address their second line center position, the Predators right. do not address that position, then you have to look at that and say, what effect did that have on the balance of power in the Central? This is the trick. It's not just about today. It's not just about the future. It's also about what your opponents are doing.
Which brings us to another sort of discussion about this Predators team and all of hockey. Everyone's looking for defensemen. Everyone. Chicago's biggest problem, defensemen. Pittsburgh's biggest problem, defensemen. Great teams. I mean, great teams. Epically great teams. 6 Stanley Cup championships between the two of them. What are they looking for? Defensemen.
Right.
And that's what they're trying to find. And it's like you talk about breaking up with the girlfriend. It's like, I like the girl we're with right now. Those four in the back line there, in the blue line, they're pretty spectacular. Those four, as long as that group doesn't break up, I'm good with David Poile sort of doing almost anything at this point. Whether it's elevating from Milwaukee, whether it's signing free agency, I do feel like they're one or two pieces away from being the favorite in the division, but as long as they keep their defense core intact. That's the key there. They have an advantage over everybody else as long as they keep that group intact. And so going into the postseason with those four guys still in those positions, the top two blue lines – pairs for the Predators are better than everybody else's. And I would take that advantage. It's like having starting pitching in baseball. I would take that advantage over anybody else's advantages right now today. I expect David Poile to do something, and that may shift. Scott Burnside just said, he goes, you kind of have to put Nashville atop that heap. I still would pick Chicago. But a two seed gives you home ice advantage through at least two rounds of the playoffs. Maybe three, maybe four. Pittsburgh was a two seed. They had home ice, right? So getting to that two seed, I think, is a really important, critical sort of step for this franchise. You get to that two seed, and you have home ice advantage over half the league, and that's important.
But I would ask this, because the conversation earlier today was, do you think that this given roster, no changes, Poile just comes in, elevates, you trust young guys to develop, do you feel like this roster is capable of winning the Stanley Cup? And I think we both said, as it sits today, with no additional pieces brought in, we don't feel good about that.
Make the playoffs, yes.
Right.
Win the cup, probably not.
But that's my point. Right. Is that enough now? Winning the Central Division and you're out in the second round, is that going to satisfy everybody? Because is this team capable of that? Sure. But if it's not capable of winning the cup, Does everybody still feel good about
like
that?
The second date doesn't live up to the first date?
No, I mean,
the first date was so good and so amazing that you can't wait for the second date and it doesn't live up to the hype.
We can't sit here on one side and say the level of love for the Preds in this city has grown to a new level and that the level of passion has grown, and then at the same time say, but everybody would be okay with a little step back. I mean, I just don't think that's this is now there is a realistic fan base saying, hey, we went to the Cup last year, we want to go again this year, and this year we want to win it. And I think barring injury and things like that that you can never predict, that fan minds can wrap around that. But if your logic is to take the same exact team in and win
a
cup.
Yeah, I think expectations change then to your point. But the beauty, like, listen, the whole point of playing sports is to have expectations. Like, you want to have a great team. That's the beauty of
it. Sure.
I as a personal fan, I tend to side on I enjoy when there's less pressure and expectation as a fan because then I'm pleasantly surprised and I'm more of a negative fan in that sense. But as actual expectation for a franchise, you much rather be picked to win it than not picked to win it. I mean, you want to be good, and that's the whole point. But with that comes expectation and pressure, and with pressure and expectations come people are going to be critical. People are going to be disappointed when things don't go their way. Like, there's negative aspects to that. But that's part of growing up and becoming a real hockey town is, oh, by the way, there's pressure to win now. And they're good. The issue is they're good enough to win. They are a piece away from being a team that's good enough to win the Stanley Cup. They are, maybe it's two pieces away from being good enough to win the Stanley Cup. If they were the St. Louis Blues last year and they'd made that run, we'd be looking at the Blues going, well, they traded their best defenseman at the deadline, sort of rebuilt. Okay, not great. You know, aging Anaheim team. Okay, that's one thing. This is a young, talented Predators core nucleus that's going to be together for a while, and they've got the coach, they've got the GM, they've got the talent. To win the whole thing, there is now pressure to win the whole thing.
But the difficulty in my mind is that the roster is stuck between a rock and a hard place, because I agree with you. I don't want to see a top four defenseman go away. I also don't feel like this current roster can win a Stanley Cup. And I feel like the only way you can get the type of scorer it would need to win a Stanley Cup is probably to deal a player that's a top four defenseman, which then means I'm not sure that it has the pieces here to win a Stanley Cup. So no matter how you run around it, I feel like a dog chasing my tail.
In Poyle, I trust. I'm just going to say, I think if they're one piece away, like, to me, James Neal is what they lost, right?
Right.
James Neal's not worth one of the top four defensemen.
No.
Not even close. So can you replace James Neal without giving up the top four defensemen? Absolutely.
But I don't think that James Neal was the only loss. I think that what we learned in the playoffs is that we need better play out of the second line center. We need an upgrade at that position. I'm afraid that the only way we get that upgrade is to give up a stellar player. So that's the never-ending cycle that I think we're in as an organization. That's what's going to make the draft so interesting tonight to watch. Again, Dan Rosen going to join us in about 30 minutes
from
NHL.
Jimmy Butler play hockey center position?
Maybe. I wouldn't put anything past him. But Dan Rosen, NHL.com, going to join us in about 30. Speaking of Jimmy Butler, the NBA had some big news last night, and it brings into question NBA fan expectations. We'll break that down next as I go unfiltered. I'm Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.